ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
In the fifth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 13, text 21.
Rajovacha, Aho Nrijanma Khila Janma Shobanam Kim Janma Bistva Parerapya Mushmin Nayatrishikesha Yashakritatmanam Mahatmanam Ya Mahatmanam Vaha Prachurasamagamah.
Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Translation: King Rahuguna said, "This birth, as a human being, is the best of all. Even birth among the demigods in the heavenly planets is not as glorious as birth as a human being on this earth. What is the use of the exalted position of a demigod? In the heavenly planets, due to profuse material comforts, there is no possibility of associating with devotees." Purport: human birth is a great opportunity for self-realization. One may take birth in a high planetary system among the demigods, but due to profusion of material comforts, one cannot gain release from material bondage. Even on this earth, those who are very opulent do not generally care to take to Krishna consciousness. An intelligent person actually interested in getting freed from the material clutches must associate with pure devotees. By such association, one can gradually become detached from the material attraction of money and women. Money and women are the basic principles of material attachment. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu therefore advised those who are actually serious about returning back to Godhead to give up money and women in order to be fit to enter the kingdom of God. Money and women can be fully utilized in the service of the Lord, and one who can utilize them in this way can become freed from this material bondage.
Satam prasangan mama virya samvido bhavanti hitkarna rasayana katha.
Only in the association of devotees can one relish the glorification of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Just through a little association with a pure devotee, one can become successful in his journey back to Godhead. Rahuguna said, "Today is a moment of thrill and joy for Maharaj Rahuguna. After hearing these wonderful instructions of Jadabharat on the forest of material enjoyment, of how this material world is such a dangerous place that the living entity enters this forest of the material world and tries in so many ways and so many shapes and so many forms to get some shelter, some enjoyment, some hope in this material world, and Jadabharata, so expertly with his analogies, smashes the hopes of Maharaj Rahuguna in the so many previous verses and explains the terrible, unfortunate condition of the living entity who tries to enjoy the forest of this material world. And now, today, Maharaj Rahuguna starts speaking the realization of his heart. Today is a moment of fortune, the moment of joy for him. His hopes in the material world have been thrashed. and Maharaj Rahuguna with great ecstasy in their experience of transcendental realization is saying, is expressing his fortune. What is the use of even opulence of the heavens? Birth in this material world on the earth as a human being is the most fortunate. And he's actually experiencing that fortune, that touch of transcendence within his heart, which is giving him these ecstasies, these thrills, and these realizations. Previously also, Maharaj Rahuguna had once referred to the demigods. And he said, Naham Vishanke Suraraja Vajran Natrayaksha Shulan Nayamasya Dandat Nagnyarka Soma Nilavitta Pastrach Shanke Brisham Brahma Kulava Manat. Previously, when Maharaj Rahugun had offended Jadabharat, and Jadabharat had spoken beautiful instructions on how the soul is separate from the body, Maharaj Rahugun understood that this is not an ordinary person. Jadabharat is a greatly self-realized soul. And therefore, Maharaj Rahugun got down from his palanquin, begged pardon from Jadabharat, begged forgiveness from him, and he exclaimed that, my dear sir, I am not fearful of the great thunderbolt of Indra. Naham Vishanke Suraraja Vajran, the Vajra of Suraraj Indra. Natrayaksha Shulan, I am not afraid of the piercing trident of Lord Shiva. Neither am I afraid of the chastising rod of Yamraj. What to speak of the fierce fire, the scorching sun, the moon, the wind? I am not afraid of anyone. However, I am afraid of offending the Brahmanas. I am very much afraid of this. Prabhupada translates it twice. So, at that time also, Maharaj Rahugun had spoken in great awe that I do not care for all the demigods in the heavens. But at that time, Maharaj Rahugun had not spoken out of spiritual realization or ecstasy. At that time, Maharaj Rahuguna had spoken out of fear. Prabhupada explains in the purport that he was so fearful of the curse of the Brahmanas that he knew that if the demigods in the heavens attack him, at best he will die. But the curse of the Brahmanas can not only destroy him, his entire dynasty, his entire family. So at that time, Maharaj Rahugun spoke up that I am not afraid of all these demigods, but I am extremely afraid of committing a Vaishnava aparad. So please forgive me. And he begged pardon from Jadabharata. At that time, Maharaj Rahuguna was actually going to meet Agastya Rishi. So out of his natural piety or out of natural fear, Maharaj Rahuguna had spoken like this. But now in this verse, when he actually disregards the demigods and he considers them insignificant, and he considers all the material opulences and comforts available in the heavenly planets as insignificant, this is coming from the depth of his heart, from the joy that he is experiencing of realization after hearing the instructions of Jadabharat. This thrill, this joy that one experiences when one gets some realization in Krishna consciousness is actually some experience of ecstasy. Sometimes this experience of ecstasy or joy or thrill in Krishna consciousness is also experienced by people who are not completely surrendered. However, this joy is very short-lasting for them. For example, we find that in the Krishna book, in the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Akrura has been requested by Lord Krishna to go to Hastinapur and see the situation of how Dhritarashtra is actually taking care of his own children and the children of the Pandavas, the children of Pandu, the Pandavas. So Akrura, after seeing the partiality of Dhritarashtra for his own children, starts giving him some good instructions about how this material world is a temporary place and he should not just be attached to his sons and therefore be biased towards them and not take care of the Pandavas, discriminate against the Pandavas. Akrura gave some beautiful examples to Dhritarashtra to show the temporary nature of the material world. Akrura said this material world is like a magician's illusion. A magician, he produces so many wonderful illusions. However, those illusions have no reality. They are simply existing for that time. And he also said that this material world is like a flight of fancy, which only a person who fancies something in the material world takes it very seriously. If someone doesn't fancy those things, then this material world in and of itself is not attractive. So in this way, Akrura gives transcendental knowledge to Dhritarashtra. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in Sarartha Darshani explains that Dhritarashtra thinks that he already knows all this knowledge that Akrura is giving him. And being proud of this knowledge, slightly sarcastically, he speaks like a saintly person. Dhritarashtra says, "My dear Akrura, you are a great giver of charity. Just like you give charity to the hungry in Mathura by giving them the donation of food, similarly you are giving me charity of transcendental knowledge, seeing me as an ignorant fool. I thank you very much for this donation." And then Dhritarashtra speaks his heart. He says, just like lightning is sparkling, but it cannot remain in a cloud for a long time, similarly, your pleasing words, this donation of transcendental knowledge that you are giving me, it cannot remain in my unsteady heart because of my prejudice towards my sons. So Dhritarashtra is comparing his heart, his unsteady heart, to the cloud, and the lightning to the illumination that comes from the pleasing words of a sadhu. Although the lightning illuminates the sky just like broad daylight, but it doesn't last for long. The reason is because the lightning is in the temporary phase in a dark cloud. Vidyut saudamani yatha. Just like a lightning remains for a little time, similarly Dhritarashtra said, your instructions do not stay in my heart. And by the way, in the next verse, Dhritarashtra justifies himself. He says, by the way, do not think that I am biased. The fact is, this is all the arrangement of the Supreme Lord who has appeared in our dynasty. And he gives justification and logic. He says, just like the Supreme Lord has inspired you to give me knowledge, similarly, the same Supreme Lord is inspiring me to reject that knowledge. So ultimately everything is happening by the mercy of the Supreme Lord. And in this way he absolves himself of the responsibility of not taking to Krishna consciousness. Although he hears the same instructions of the temporary nature of this material world, which is just like a magician's illusion or like a flight of fancy of a bewildered person. So Dhritarashtra rejects this knowledge. So his thrill of realization in Krishna consciousness is like a lightning in a cloud for a very short time. Sometimes we find in the life of materialistic people, they also express these kind of thrills and joys at a specific time in their life, which they call realizations or divine expressions of love. Sometimes they sing songs, run around trees, and they say that I'm experiencing something very great. I can actually give up my entire life for this experience that I get, especially in kind of first love or something like that. Like Gaur Gopal Prabhu speaks this very funny but penetrating joke. He says, one time, a man entered a mental asylum and he saw one fellow in the mental asylum. He had a small thin thread with him and he was standing on the table. And he had tied this thread to the fan and he was trying to commit suicide. And he was shouting, Layla, Layla, something like that. So this man asked the doctor, what is he up to? The doctor said, no, this is his daily activity. Every day he tries to commit suicide, so we have given this thin thread to him and he can just try to do this activity. But what is this thing he's shouting? He said, that is the name of the woman that he was loving very much. And because she ran away from him, so he has become crazy and he shouts, Layla, Layla. And he keeps doing this activity every day in this mental asylum. So this man said, oh, he's gone crazy, poor fellow. And he went ahead. Ahead he saw another fellow on a table, again with a thin cloth, thin string, tied to the fan, and he was again trying to strangle himself. So the doctor, the new person was bewildered. He said, what is this person doing? And when he went close, he heard, he's also shouting, Layla, Layla. So he asked the doctor, why this person is shouting the same name? He said, somehow, the lady who ran away from that person ran away with this person. And therefore, he went crazy. And therefore, now he is here in the mental asylum and he's also doing the same activity. Frustrated. So, the idea is that although they may speak, these materialistic people may speak of a spark of realization, a thrill of ecstasy, the joy of association with the opposite person, this thrill, this so-called happiness that they experience is not actually any spiritual realization. It is simply a change in their material position of enjoyment. In the Nectar of Devotion, Srila Rupa Goswami explains that there are two defects of these material thrills or these material pleasures. One is it fades away, and two, it becomes rejectable. So he explains that material pleasure has these two qualities, chapala sukha and bhogatyaga. Chapala sukha is that material enjoyment which has a temporary fading nature. For example, chewing a bubble gum. You know, children nowadays out of style, they're chewing bubble gums, or chewing gums, and they're chewing. And the more they chew, the temporary taste that is there fades away. And then they simply continue chewing it out of style or out of exercise to the gums or whatever. But there is no taste or there is no pleasure. Chapala sukha, it's immediately gone. And the second nature of this material pleasure is bhogatyaga. As one engages in enjoying one thing, it gradually loses flavor. And it becomes detestable, rejectable. So then one gives it up and searches for another type of material pleasure. So it's not basically a joy that they are getting. In this way, they're just constantly changing, accepting and rejecting different types of material pleasures. And therefore, it can never be accepted as a pure spiritual realization, which is actually eternal in nature. So great devotees in their lives at different times have actually experienced this transcendental ecstasy at the touch of transcendence, at the touch of the experience of spiritual realization, which Maharaj Rahuguna is expressing within this verse. We find in the story of Yamunacharya, who as a child was a great devotee of the Lord, and then eventually, because he was given half the kingdom in that debate, he became absorbed in worldly duties. And Yamunacharya gradually became so absorbed that he completely forgot his spiritual duties. So his grandfather Nathamuni, when he was about to give up his body, was very much concerned. He said, Yamunacharya was such a great soul. And he has such a potential to actually become an acharya. However, he has become absorbed in worldly duties. So he asks one favor to Ram. To Ram Mishra, his disciple, that you somehow or the other bring Yamunacharya back to the spiritual path. And Ram Mishra is his name? Uses his transcendental intelligence and creates a very brilliant idea. He every day supplies a special type of vegetable to Yamunacharya, and Yamunacharya becomes addicted to it. So one day Ram Mishra doesn't supply that vegetable. And Yamunacharya, because of his addiction, calls the cook, where is the vegetable? He says, oh, the person who would bring it and cook it is not here today. So tomorrow when he comes, bring him here. That was the only way Ram Mishra could have ever achieved the audience of the king, Yamunacharya. So when Ram Mishra came in front of Yamunacharya, he told Yamunacharya that your Grandfather Nathamuni has kept a great treasure for you, which is surrounded by 7 walls and is protected by serpents. And he has told me before giving up his body that I should give this treasure to you. But there is a condition. And what is that condition? That you must come alone. Yamunacharya jumped at the thought. He needed a lot of money for his activities and conquests as a king. Immediately he left with Ram Mishra. And on his way, Ram Mishra started chanting the beautiful verses of Bhagavad Gita. As these verses of Bhagavad Gita were entering into the ears of Yamunacharya, there was something happening to his heart. There was a transformation taking place. And when Ram Mishra came to the 12th chapter and chanted the 8th verse, Mayeva mana adatsva, mayi buddhim niveshaya, nivashisyasi mayeva, ataurdvam nasamshaya. One who fixes his intelligence in me, his mind completely absorbed in me, he lives in me without a doubt. Nivashisyasi mayeva, he completely lives within me. So when Yamunacharya heard this verse, he said, enough. And he collapsed. Tears of ecstasy were in his eyes. His material hopes had been crushed. And he remembered his previous experiences of devotional service. That was a moment of transcendence, of transformation in his heart. That was a moment when again he was reminded of his previous devotional activities. And he decided to surrender. He said, now I am not going to go back into my kingdom. I am simply going to remain in the forest. But Ram Mishra said, what about that treasure? He said, I have no interest in the treasure anymore. Now I have found the greatest treasure, the treasure of devotion, devotional service. Then Ram Mishra explained what was that treasure. And when he heard about that treasure, his joy of reaching that treasure became double fold, triple fold. Ram Mishra explained that treasure is the beautiful form of Ranganath Ji, who is surrounded by the 7 walls of his temple and is protected by Anantashesh, the snake on whom he lies. So in this way, Yamunacharya became more ecstatic, and from that moment onwards, he started moving closer and closer towards advancement in realization of Krishna. Similarly, we find in the life of Lord Buddha, on that fateful or fortunate day, when Siddharth was allowed to go out of his house with his prime minister, protected in a palanquin, he saw an old man. He saw a diseased man. He saw a dying man. And he asked the prime minister, will you also become old? Because he had never seen an old man, a diseased man, or a dying man in his life. There was a prediction that either he will become the greatest emperor or he'll become one of the greatest saints of those times. So his father had completely protected him, not allowed to see any miseries of this world. And when he saw the old man, he asked the prime minister, will you become old? He said, of course. Will I also become old? I also become diseased? And will I also die? The prime minister said, yes, of course. Not knowing the effect his words would have on Siddharth. On that day he vowed that I am going to conquer death. I am not going to die simply in this material world like the cats and dogs. And he decided to renounce everything. He was not attracted to his palace, not attracted to his house, to his family, to his beautiful wife. Because that moment of spiritual realization that he got, when he saw the dying man, when he heard that yes, you are also going to die, was the moment of beginning for him, was a moment of awakening for him, enlightenment for him. We find also in the 3rd canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, when the 4 Kumaras, who were already enlightened, who were already awakened, who were already absorbed in the Brahman realization, for the first time, when they actually came in contact with the lotus feet of Lord Vishnu, what happened? There was a revolution. There was an agitation of change. Tasya ravinda nayanasya padaravinde
किंजल कमिष्ट तुलसी मकरंद वायु संक्षोभमक्षर जुषाम चित्त अंतर्गतेन स्वविवरेण चकार तेषां संक्षोभमक्षर जुषाम चित्त तन्वो.
It is explained that Lord Vishnu, he came walking all the way from the interiors of Vaikuntha right up to the gate of Vaikuntha. Why? Srila Prabhupada explains in the purport that sometimes when devotees fight, that fight is not because they are envious of each other, but because they have a difference of opinion on how to serve the Lord. And sometimes when they fight, because both have the right motive, the Lord or His pure representatives have to personally intervene to make them peaceful. Therefore, the Lord, Prabhupada explains, the fight was because the Kumaras could not see the lotus feet of the Lord. And they were agitated because of that. So they became angry and they cursed the two gatekeepers of Vaikuntha, Jaya and Vijay. So the Lord, to pacify the Kumaras, personally brought His two lotus feet over there to show the Kumaras. And when the Kumaras, they actually saw the effulgence of the Lord and paid obeisances, the first thing they got darshan of was the lotus feet of the Lord. And it is explained what was their experience.
Tasya Ravinda Nayanasya Padaravinde.
That personality whose eyes are like a lotus. Tasya Ravinda Nayanasya Padaravinde. And whose feet are also like a note, like a lotus. At his lotus feet, there is something very special.
Kinjal kamishra tulasi makaranda vayuhu.
There is a mixture, kinjal kamishra, of tulasi, honey, and the lotus fragrance, makaranda vayu. The fragrance of honey mixed with the fragrance of lotus and the fragrance of tulsi is coming out of those lotus feet of the Lord. When that fragrance,
antargatena sovivarena chakaratesham,
when that fragrance entered the nostrils of the four Kumaras for the first time, what happened?
Sankshobham aksharajusham.
Sankshobham. There was an agitating change. There was a revolution in their consciousness. But how can there be a change in the consciousness of the four Kumaras? Because aksharajusham, they were completely equanimous. They were Brahman realized. Nothing of this material world could tempt them, could change their mind or consciousness. Therefore, it is a proof that this was a moment of transcendental experience. This was a moment of the thrill and joy in association with the Lord. Api chitta tanvo, and their body and mind, chitta tanvo, were completely shaking in ecstasy. We find also in the life of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Bhaktivinoda Thakur in his earthly pastimes was searching for the absolute truth right from his childhood. He would hear the Ramayana, he would hear the Mahabharata from the watchman of his maternal grandfather's estate. He was so interested in hearing something about the absolute truth. And then as he grew up, because he was very expert at English, he was learning so many Western philosophies and he became biased towards the Western philosophies, and gradually he started learning about the Vedic scriptures, the Bhagavad Puran, and for many months and years he was searching for the copy of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. It took him so many months and years to search for one bona fide copy of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And in his biography, Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes that when I read the Chaitanya Charitamrita, immediately I experienced anurag. Just by the first reading of Chaitanya Charitamrita, there was an experience of transcendental ecstasy which comes just before the bhava platform. When we read Chaitanya Charitamrita or Bhagavatam, sometimes we are struggling to even stay awake. So that is a proof that we are not getting that transcendental experience of ecstasy that these great souls and these great devotees are getting in the association of the Supreme Lord, and those things which bring us closer to the Supreme Lord. In the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Srila Narad Muni to give Vyasadev an idea of this transcendental ecstasy, tells about his own life. Because Narad Muni begins chastising Vyasadev with a very interesting verse. He says that, are you simply satisfied by identifying the body and the mind as objects of self-realization? You have cheated people. Body and mind cannot be used as objects of self-realization. The thrill and the happiness that you can feel in the body and the mind is like Rupa Goswami explaining Chapala Sukha or Bhogatyaga experience. There is no real experience of spiritual joy. And to explain this experience of spiritual joy, Narad Muni starts talking about his own life. And he says, because I served the Bhakti Vedantas and got their remnants with permission, I started experiencing something special within my heart. And then when my mother died, I immediately went towards the north. And he traveled through so many places. And then Narad Muni starts explaining, I came to an uninhabited forest. There, in the shadow of a banyan tree, I started meditating upon the super soul, using my intelligence, following the footsteps and the instructions given by those Bhakti Vedantas. In the next verse, Narad Muni says that soon my mind became transformed in transcendental love. Tears of ecstasy started rolling down my eyes, and without delay, the Supreme Personality of Godhead appeared in the lotus of my heart. Exceedingly overpowered by feelings of happiness, Narad Muni explains, each of my senses were separately enlivened. Each of them became ecstatic in and of themselves, and I became completely lost in this joy and ecstasy. And then he explains what this form of the Lord did when it appeared in his mind. Two things it did. First, it completely captivated his mind. And second, it put him in utter distress when the form disappeared from his mind. When the form captivated his mind, he said it satisfied me completely. And it erased at once all my mental incongruities. So many people in so many ways in this entire material world are trying to somehow balance their mental incongruities. And there are so many self-help books which also come, which give you so many ideas that do this and your mind will become peaceful, you will get powerful attitude, you will become the best, you can win. But here Narad Muni is explaining his personal experience of what the Lord's form did in his mind. He said he completely satisfied him and erased all the mental incongruities. And then the Lord's form disappeared from his mind. Vaiklavya Durmanaiva. And he explains, just like a person who has achieved a very desirable object, Durmanaiva. If he loses that desirable object, how miserable he becomes. So in that way, Narad Muni said that I became extremely miserable when the Lord disappeared. Seeing the misery of Narad Muni, the Lord spoke to him in a very pleasing manner just to pacify him. With great gravity and pleasing words, the Lord said, I regret, my dear Narad Muni, that in this life you will now never be able to see me again. For two reasons. Avipakva kashayanam and durdarshoham kuyoginam. He says, because avipakva kashayanam, you are still tainted with some material dirt. So because I am completely transcendental, you cannot perceive me clearly. And because you are incomplete in service, kuyoginam, you have not yet perfected your service, therefore, in this life, you will never be able to see me again. Then why did I show you my form? That Krishna explains in the next verse. He says, just to increase your desire, because having once seen me, you will hanker for me more and more. And the more you hanker for me, the more your material desires will be finished. So just to increase this material hankering, Krishna gave him that taste of transcendence. That one experience of ecstasy, and Narad Muni went mad. It was enough for him. Although Krishna promised him that in this very lifetime I will not show you my form again, still Narad Muni knew, Krishna knew, that simply hankering after seeing that form again and again, that hankering will destroy his material dirt and increase his hankering so much that Narad Muni will become perfectly purified and then he will become my associate. And then Krishna, he promised Narad Muni that at the end of the millennium, when you give up your body, just like thunder and lightning appear together, similarly you will be able to maintain your consciousness. Because when thunder appears, it's a very fearful situation. Like even in the morning today, there were so many noises of the clouds, rumbling. It's a dark situation, fearful situation. But then lightning also appears. So at the time of death, it is a very fearful situation. But you, Narad Muni, will be able to maintain your consciousness. And you will, in your next life, achieve the form of Narad Muni. So there, Krishna explains to Narad Muni that this transcendental experience which I have given you is not material. Because material experience is chapala sukha. It comes for some time and it goes away. But this transcendental taste of experience that Krishna gave to Narad Muni, that ecstasy would remain even at the point of death and even beyond death, and Narad Muni would be able to maintain his consciousness. We find in the pastimes of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu for the first time met Ishwarpuri in Gaya and saw those two lotus footprints of Vishnu, what happened to him? There was a transformation of consciousness in his life. Of course, we know Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But in his pastimes, he wanted to show that unless one accepts a guru, unless one actually serves the guru and surrenders to that guru, one cannot experience this transcendental taste, this transcendental ecstasy of spiritual life. Therefore, Shyamananda Prabhu was giving an example one time that people go to so many different types of gurus, and especially in India, which is a supermarket of so-called spiritualists and philosophies. He was explaining also that Indians will never win Olympic medals because those animal activities are not for Indians. But if there is a competition for philosophy, then Indians will get the gold medal, silver medal and bronze medal also. And also medals for cheating. Because the best philosophies are also available in India and all bogus philosophies are also available in India. All the prizes will go to Indians. So then he was explaining that sometimes in a house, when there is renovation done, then generally people like to change their furniture. You know, they just want some change. Because the same material things don't make them happy. You know. So if the bed is here, they'll put it there. If the study table is here, they'll put it there. If the bathroom door is here, they'll just change the door on another side. It basically remains the same, but some new experience. So when the furniture changes in the house, then the many electrical fittings also change. And some of the old electrical fittings have become redundant. So some of the plugs are still there, but now the electrical fittings have changed, so there is no electricity coming out of those plugs. So Shyamananda Prabhu was explaining that similarly, all these bogus philosophies and bogus gurus, actually Prabhupada says we should not use the word bogus guru, because the word guru means bona fide guru. So bogus philosophy and bogus proponents of these philosophies, they are like these plugs which do not have the electric current flowing from them. So even if one attaches the plug, the instrument, the bulb, there is no light coming from that. So similarly, however, when one comes in contact with a live wire, then as soon as one contacts that live wire, one knows there is electricity flowing in this live wire. How does one know? By that experience of thrill in his body, if that current is very low. Otherwise, little extra experience. So when one comes to Krishna consciousness, one experiences that thrill of joy, which comes in parampara from the powerhouse Krishna, then that experience within one's heart actually convinces one of the power and potency of devotional service. That transformation does take place in the heart of the devotee. That's why people go to so many satsangs and so many programs, and the only transformation they experience is they need a lot of water. Why? Because a lot of tears are flowing from their eyes. Wow, maja aya, maja aya. It's simply some kind of mental or sensual experience. But if you ask them what they understood, how it has brought a change in their lifestyle, no change in their lifestyle. Their lifestyle continues the same. But when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu saw those two lotus prints of Lord Vishnu and served Srila Ishwara Puri in Gaya, then that transformation took place in his heart. He wanted to show it by his personal example that unless one surrenders, one cannot experience this great joy of devotional service. And what kind of transformation was that? When he came back from Gaya, he was a completely transformed person. All those devotees who would run away from Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, because Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would catch them and give them logic, arguments, and rack their brains with so many different types of ideas, simply by seeing Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they would run away. Those very same devotees could not give up the association of Lord Chaitanya. In fact, one time, Lord Chaitanya was crying, "Krishna, Krishna, Krishna, where are you?" So Gadadhar Pandit, trying to pacify him, said, "Krishna is in your own heart." And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu started tearing out his own heart. And Gadadhar Pandit tried to pacify him in some words, "Krishna is coming, Krishna is coming." When Sachi Devi saw this kind of transformation in her son, she says, "When I see my son like this, I become so fearful that I am scared to even approach him. But Gadadhar, you are a very nice boy. You know how to handle my son. So my request to you is, you constantly please stay with him." That Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that Nimai Pandit who would travel around like a logician, like a proud scholar, he became so humble that he would wash the dhotis of the devotees. He would fold those dhotis. He would carry it on his shoulders for them. And in return, he would only beg for one benediction. He would say, "My dear devotees, you have Krishna with you. And you have the power to give Krishna to anyone by your benediction. Please kindly give me the blessings that I achieve Krishna. I always remain with Krishna." And the devotees would profusely shower their blessings upon Sri Chaitanya, upon Nimai Pandit, and say that may Krishna always remain with you. So this transformation was brought out in the heart of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Gaya, in the association of Srila Ishwara Puri. And then when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu for the first time saw, took darshan of Lord Jagannath, what happened? Fainted. So many ecstasies erupted in his heart and he completely fainted over there. The mundane, ordinary people over there couldn't understand and they wanted to beat this golden sannyasi for falling in the middle of the temple hall and shaking like this and producing all these different varieties of ecstatic symptoms in the body. But Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya said, "Wait, this is something very special." So Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya took Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to his house. And for 7 days, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya instructed Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the philosophy of Vedanta Sutra. On the last day, there was a very special experience that Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya would go through in his life, which he would never forget again. He asked Lord Chaitanya, "7 days I have told you this knowledge and you are simply quiet, not asking any questions. Are you understanding anything? Don't you have any doubts?" Lord Chaitanya said, "I understand every Vedanta Sutra that you are saying like the bright sun. I can see it. But your explanation is like a dark cloud which is covering the bright sun of the Vedanta Sutra." And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya had never ever got such a feedback in his life, on his classes, on his discourses. In fact, he was the undisputed leader in the entire world as far as knowledge and scripture was concerned, as far as logic was concerned. And somebody giving him this feedback that your class was bogus. It was like covering the real essence of the scriptures. It was too much for him to take. So then he said, "Then you explain the scripture. If you think you know better, then you explain." And when Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu started explaining, especially the Atmaram verse, and Lord Chaitanya was so soft that he told Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, "You first explain in the Atmaram verse, because you are so intelligent, you know." So then he gave 9 different types of explanations of that verse. Now imagine if you had to give 9 Bhagavatam classes on this verse, you know. Somehow we are able to manage to prepare for one. So the same person giving 9 Bhagavatam classes on the spot, with different themes and different understandings, it really requires a lot of intelligence. And here is Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya giving amazing explanations, 9 of them on the spot. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gives 81 other explanations without touching the previous 9. And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya experiences that moment of transcendental ecstasy. His heart is transformed. He is finished. He is defeated. He surrenders to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. You are the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Nobody but the Supreme Personality of Godhead can explain the scripture in this way. And how does he express his joy of fortune? Just like Maharaj Rahuguna is expressing his joy of fortune. This birth as a human being is the best of all. Even the demigods in the heavens, useless. This birth as a human being is more glorious. So Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, in his experience of fortune and joy, he says, Taraki ka shri gal sange bheu bheu kari sei mukhe ebe sada Krishna hari boli. He says, Taraki ke shri gal sange, because I was associating with jackals in the form of logicians or logicians in the form of jackals. Bheu bheu kari, I was also barking with them, giving so many different types of logic. Now with the same mouth, I am amazed that I am Sada Kahi Krishna Hari. I am simply chanting constantly the holy names of Krishna and Hari. How did this happen? How did this transformational experience take place in my heart? Now my heart is, which was so much attracted to mundane activity and materialistic logic, it's simply being attracted to the lotus form of the Lord. And I can't just but stop chanting the holy names of the Lord, glorify the Lord. How did this happen? That he explains in the next verse. Kaha bahir mukha tarakika shishya gane sange kaha e sange sudha samudra tarange. He says, where I was associating with the bahir mukhas, the non-devotees, and tarakika sange, those people who are the disciples of logicians and who are simply attracted to the impermanent material world, the materialists, where I was simply associating with them, and now where I am associating with the wonderful devotees of the Lord. And how does he explain them? Kaha e sanga sudha samudra tarange. With these devotees, I am absorbed and submerged in the ocean of nectar, of devotion, in the association of these devotees. And in one purport, Srila Prabhupada explains that the association of devotees is such an ocean of nectar, of devotional service, that the ocean not only satisfies one, but the devotees create waves in that ocean. And the wave in the ocean, it comes from the ocean, but it heightens the ocean, especially if it's a tsunami wave. So the association of powerful devotees is like a tsunami wave. But it doesn't destroy anything, but it simply but of course our material attachments, and it submerges one in the ocean of devotional service. So Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya is expressing his joy. Where I was simply stuck in the muck of materialistic association, suffering in the threefold miseries of this material world, and what is my fortune? Where am I submerged in this association of devotees? So when one comes to Krishna consciousness, one experiences this real great fortune. And such a person goes crazy in the estimation of the materialistic people. They say, you were okay till yesterday. What happened to you suddenly? You look in the same body, the same way you talk, but something has gone wrong or something has gone right. Something special has happened. Now, you no more care for the mundane materialistic things of this world. In fact, King Kulashekhar, when he experiences this moment of transcendental ecstasy, he expresses his joy of fortune in a very interesting verse of how he doesn't care a fig for the things of this material world. He says, Prithvi renuranu payamsi kanika falgus fulingo lagus Tejo nishvasanam marutanutaram randram susukshmam nabaha Chutra rudra pita mahaprabhruttaya kita samastasura
दृष्टे यत्र सतारको विजयते श्रीपाद धूलिकणः.
He says that once, just only once, drishte yatrasa, once if one has seen the transcendental form of the Lord, what happens to the heart of such a person?
Prithvi renu anu.
The entire world, the whole earth becomes no greater than a speck of dust for him.
Payam sikanikaha.
All the waters in the oceans become mere droplets for him.
Phalgus phulingo lagus.
And all the fire becomes like a minute spark. Phulingo lagus, small minute spark. The totality of the fierce winds that are blowing become no more than a mere sigh. Bas. That's all. He doesn't care for it at all. And the vast expanse of the space becomes like a tiny hole for him. It's just a small space. That's all. He doesn't care. Great lords like Rudra and Brahma become insignificant. And all demigods become like small insects. And for one, just one dust particle, Vijayate Shripada Duli Kanaha, the transformation that by seeing the Lord, that itself is so great. What to speak of seeing the Lord? Even one dust particle can defeat the greatness of all these great things. Defeat the greatness and the vastness of the earth, the demigods, the open sky, the huge fierce winds, the totality of fire and the ocean, the waters in the ocean. They are nothing for such a person. So people start wondering, till yesterday he was okay. Now he doesn't care anything for this world. What happened? Nothing happened to his body, nothing happened to his mind, but his heart has experienced a transformation of Krishna consciousness. And every devotee who comes to the path of Krishna consciousness and takes it seriously in his or her own heart has experienced that transformation of fortune. We all can remember that first day, that first prasadam that we tasted, how it exploded on our taste buds. The first darshan that we had of the deities, how it captivated us. The first kirtan that we danced, we just felt as if we are floating in the air. The first embrace that devotees did to us, and we felt we are melting in their arms. So, we all have had that moment of transformation. And that moment of transformation was the moment of spiritual ecstasy. That moment of enlightenment. But how did that moment come? Why did that moment come? That moment came because we could feel the fortune of being saved. That's why one devotee writes an article in the Back to Godhead of how I came to Krishna consciousness. And the topic of that article is how I was saved from being saved. That means there were some people who were trying him to drag him to material life and saying, we will save you, we will give you happiness. And there were some people who were dragging him to some spiritual societies. We will save you, we will give you some spiritual pleasure. And then he says, when he came to Krishna consciousness, when he experienced that joy of transformation, of surrender to the Supreme Lord, and then he sighs in relief, how I was saved from being saved. And he writes his experiences of how he came to Krishna consciousness. So one feels this great fortune, and one becomes like a miser to keep this treasure within the heart. It's a great treasure. However, this fortune can lead to pride. So what is that antidote that a devotee keeps within his heart? So that he cannot but accept the fortune. He cannot but know the transformation ecstasy of his heart. But what does he do to maintain his balance, his equilibrium, to increase that spiritual ecstasy and that taste? That is explained by the beautiful dialogue between Vidura and Uddhav in the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. When Uddhav explains to Vidura, that when the Lord was leaving, the Lord told me the Uddhav Gita. But do you know what is the last thing the Lord did? When Lord Krishna was leaving this planet, the last person he remembered was you. And when Vidura heard that, he felt so fortunate. He said, my Lord,
remembered me, I am a fallen Shudra. I am good for nothing. And he remembered me as the last person before he left this world. And Vidura started crying. And Prabhupada writes in the purport that these tears of ecstasy in separation from the Lord are the last word in transcendence. For one who is progressing on the path of devotional service, crying for the Supreme Lord in separation is very good and is a sign of progress on the devotional path. And Vidura, of course, his crying was not like the materialistic people crying, but his crying was in separation. His crying was in ecstasy. Rurudo Vivlahaha, it is explained. So then, when Vidura starts crying in ecstasy, remembering the mercy of the Lord upon him, feeling the fortune, he asks Uddhav, he says, "My dear Uddhav, what about all the other personalities? What about Yudhishthir Maharaj? What about the Pandavas? What about the Yadus?" And Uddhav, when he hears about inquiries about Lord Krishna, he goes into ecstasy. He actually enters into the abode of the Lord. And after greatly trying to control himself, he comes back. And Uddhav starts telling Vidura, with great pain in his heart, "My dear Vidura, the sun of the world, Lord Krishna, has set. Our house has been swallowed by the serpent of time. What can I say about our welfare?" So then he explains, Srila Prabhupada explains in the purport, that because Vidura would feel bad that in the battle of Kurukshetra, all the Kurus were destroyed. So Uddhav also tries to share empathizing with him, that it's not your family only. The son of the world, Lord Krishna, the Lord of the Yadus, that sun has also set. And our lives, our houses have been swallowed by the serpent of time. What can I tell you about our own welfare? And Prabhupada in the purport gives five beautiful analogies to explain what the sunset can do. He explains that just at the time of sunset, the snakes become very powerful. The thieves become very encouraged at sunset time. And the ghosts become very enlivened, very active when they see the sunset. However, the lotus becomes disfigured. And the Chakravaki she starts lamenting. Similarly, when the Lord disappears from this world, the atheists become very enlivened. Just like the snakes become very powerful, or like the thieves become very encouraged, or like the ghosts become very active, similarly at the time of sunset, when the Lord disappears from this world, then all these materialistic people become very enlivened. They can continue their material activities. But the devotees, they become very sorrow and morose. Just like a lotus becomes disfigured, or as a Chakravaki laments when the sun starts setting. But Srila Prabhupada explains another very interesting thing, that when the sun sets, there is darkness for people on the earth, but there is no darkness in the sun when the sun sets. So it is not that Lord Krishna is dead and gone. No. Krishna, like the sun, is now shining in another place, in another universe, continuing his pastimes. In the next verse, Uddhav starts lamenting his fortune. He says, "Durbhago batalokoyam yadavo nitaramapi yesam vasantana vidur harimina uvodupam." Uddhav is lamenting in this situation. He says, "Durbhago iha lokoyam." The people of this world are very unfortunate. Because Krishna appeared in this world and Krishna showed his wonderful pastimes right from his childhood to his Maushal Leela. And he showed all of his six opulences. But people could not understand the glory of Lord Krishna. At best, they saw Lord Krishna as a great historical personality. Because they were not in touch with the Lord. So they could not appreciate the glory of the Lord. So, Durbhago, Uddhava laments. He says this world is condemnable. Unfortunate are the people of this world. And then in the next line he says, more unfortunate are the Yadus. Yadu, Yadavo Niratam, api, nitaram api. He says the Yadus are more unfortunate. Why? Because they were actually in touch with the Lord. Still, they could not appreciate the glory of the Lord. So in those purports, Srila Prabhupada explains these two dichotomies. Uddhav is explaining the fortune of the Yadus, that they were in direct contact with the Lord and therefore they were experiencing the ecstasy. At the same time, they were the most unfortunate. Why? Because they could not appreciate him as the Supreme Lord. They only took him as one of their relatives. And he said, more unfortunate than the Yadus is myself. Ye sam vasanto. Because I was so closely staying with Krishna, sam vasanto na vidur. But I did not take this golden opportunity to render the maximum amount of service to Krishna. And then he gives a beautiful analogy. Harimina ivodupam. Just like the fish in the milk ocean, they take the moon as an ordinary relative. So in the purport, Srila Prabhupada explains that people may not believe that there is a milk ocean. Because the people of this world, they have only experience of a saltwater ocean. And then he says that this world is also called go or cow. And cow urine, which is very salty, is very good for people who have liver trouble. Their liver trouble is taken care of. And they are only given cow urine or salty waters. Such people are never given milk or milk products, sweets, because their liver cannot digest. So just because they have never seen milk or milk products, that doesn't mean that the cow doesn't give milk. They are understanding that cow only gives cow urine because it suits me and that is my only experience. But that is their experience because of their diseased condition. So Srila Prabhupada says that those who have experience of only this world, they at best know saltwater oceans. But we can take information from the scriptures that there are also milk oceans. And from the ocean of milk, the moon rises. But the fishes swimming in the ocean, they think that this moon is at best an illuminating object. It's another fish, or at best it's an illuminating object. So people of this world, they feel Krishna is an ordinary person, or at best, he's an extraordinary person. Because he could show, he was very intelligent, you know. He's a great diplomat. He had so many ideas. So the people of this world are unfortunate. The Yadus are more unfortunate. And I, Uddhav says, am the most unfortunate. So it's a dual experience. He is the most fortunate because he had the closest association of the Lord. But that fortune in the heart of a devotee, that transformational ecstasy, is balanced when the devotee also feels misfortune. And why is that? Because if one only feels fortunate, then one will become proud. And one will become insensitive to the needs of the other devotees. Like we find in the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, when Akrura was taking Krishna from Vrindavan. Actually, Akrura was feeling so fortunate. His prayers, he's just so fortunate. Krishna will touch me, Krishna will embrace me, Krishna will call me uncle. And he was feeling so happy. And actually, Krishna did all that. And when Akrura was taking Krishna from Vrindavan, he did not pacify the gopis. He did not speak to the gopis nicely. Jai Shishirada Gopinath Bhagwan ki jai. So because of that offense, it is explained by the acharyas that Akrura had to experience separation from Krishna in the episode of the murder of Satrajit. So if one is not also feeling a lack of fortune, that's why through the entire theme in the Brihat Bhagavatamrita that Madan Gopal Prabhu was explaining, the entire theme is this. Every devotee, when he is glorified, he cannot say that, no, I do not have the Lord's mercy. Because Narad Muni is glorifying, he is proving that you have the Lord's mercy. And he is feeling the fortune of the Lord's mercy. But at the same time, he is feeling unfortunate. I could not serve the Lord as that devotee. That devotee is so special. He could serve the Lord so wonderfully. And that appreciation of another devotee's devotional service creates a natural humility in the heart of a devotee. And Sanatana Goswami writes in his commentary, in his purports, that this feeling of dissatisfaction is natural in the life of an advanced devotee. It's natural. Out of his humility, he feels dissatisfied that I am not doing enough. So that dissatisfaction and misfortune balances. Now, if someone is too much regretful and too much remorseful and too much repentant, then one will not be able to experience that fortune of transcendental ecstasy in his life. Like we find the husbands of the yagnik brahmanas, their wives, they went to Krishna, they offered Krishna, and they experienced the ecstasy and the fortune of Krishna's association. And when they came back, they chanted a very beautiful verse where they regret, they curse themselves for 10 things that they have in their life, almost. Dik janmanas, trividyatta, dik vratam, dik bhognyatam, to hell with our knowledge, to hell with our aristocratic birth, to hell with our sacrifices, to hell with all our material opulence. Because we could not appreciate the fortune of our wives. They were so simple, they went and surrendered to Krishna. And we were here stuck up in our pujas and our activities and our sacrifices. But we could not surrender to Krishna. But the Acharya has explained, they just stop at that regret and remorse. They do not run to meet Krishna. Why? The Acharya has explained, is because of their fear of Kamsa. So one must be regretful, remorseful, because Krishna only appears in a repentant heart. The heart that repents is a rightful owner of Krishna's presence. However, if one becomes too repentful and doesn't acknowledge and appreciate the fortune of Krishna consciousness descending in one's heart, then one will become very morose and one will lose this golden opportunity. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada said that a devotee, as he advances, becomes a better and better miser. And when he especially reaches the bhava platform, he becomes an expert miser. He never shows his treasure to anyone else. It is deep within his heart. Therefore, in one verse, a devotee is actually compared to a miser. It is said, Vicheyani vichintyani vicharyani puna puna kripanasya dhanani va tannamani bhavantunaha. See, what does a miser do? For him, every bit of treasure is important. So what he does? Vicheyani, he collects every coin. Not even one coin should be lost. Vicharyani, and he counts it. Vichintyani, puna puna, again and again. Actually, that's the only joy he gets. Srila Prabhupada explains that every time he will go in his passbook and see, now I had $1 million, now I have $2 million. He can eat the same 4 chapatis and a little sabji. And if he's overworking because of ulcers, he can eat less. But the fact is that his joy in life is to simply see, now my passbook has more amount of money. Again and again he'll open his passbook. Oh, now I have more money, more money. Vichintyani, puna puna, again and again. That is his only pleasure. Similarly, a devotee collects, counts, and remembers again and again that transcendental taste of ecstasy, that fortune that Krishna gave him. The experience of transformation in the heart. Kripanasya dhananiva. Just like a kripana, dhananiva, when he collects, counts and remembers his dhana, similarly, tannamanu bhavantunaha, we count every holy name, every experience of joy, thrill, ecstasy and fortune that the holy name produces within the heart of the devotee. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada said, do not take the devotees lightly. You do not know who is sitting next to you. If you would know the reality of the personality who is sitting next to you, you would faint in joy. So if one accepts that fortune in one's life and one balances that fortune by seeing his misfortune because he could not offer more, then that joy can remain in the heart of the devotee. And that is what Maharaj Rahuguna is expressing over here. In such a great happiness. This birth as a human being is the best of all. Even the birth among demigods in the heavenly planets is not as glorious as birth as a human being on this earth. What is the use of an exalted position of a demigod? Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Is there any one question that we can take? Otherwise we'll stop. Okay, thank you very much. Grantrat Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Nitai Gaur Premanandi.